Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And a good Thursday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. Should be a gorgeous day. Maybe low 80s and sunshine. Nothing to complain about here on this Thursday. Darren McFarland, that's me down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is holding Ford over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe is doing the same on the west side of town in Bellevue, and Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Inc. Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Tim Corbin, the fine baseball coach at Vanderbilt, will join us at 10:15. So in less than 15 minutes, we'll talk to Corbs. And he was one of the stars on MLB Network last night. Great work by him. Great suit, as Spencer Torkelson went number one to the Tigers. And a little bit of a surprise, yeah, you know, you still go top five, as we said, but thought it would be a little bit higher than five. Austin Martin from Vanderbilt goes to the Blue Jays at number five. And the kid we talked about from Independence High School, Robert Hassel, goes to the San Diego Padres at number eight. Garrett Crochet, that's how you say it? Garrett Crochet, yep. The big lefty. 6'6" lefty from UT goes to the White Sox at 11, and he's getting already compared to Chris Sale. I don't know. I don't think that's fair.
Oh, don't
to him.
Do that.
I know. I hate that.
I hate
that
sometimes.
They did that all night long last night, though. There was a lot of comps. I see why they do it, though.
Yes, but you know, he's 6'6". Chris Sale's, I think, 6'6". They're both lefties, power pitchers. I mean, I get it. I mean, I get the comparables, but I just hate tagging kids. You know, he's a kid. He's a young man with just a guy who's, you know, had an incredible career to this point in Major League Baseball. I just don't like those examples, but I get it. And then I guess I should bring up Bryce Jarvis, who went 18th to
Bryce Jarvis
to the Diamondbacks.
And we're going to try to get him on the show. I think maybe tomorrow is what I'm hoping for. I've been in communication with Kevin, who, if you listen to the show, you may have heard Kevin Jarvis, 12-year veteran major league pitcher, one time a member of the Nashville Sounds. He pitched for a ton of teams. But his son Bryce went to Brentwood Academy, went to Duke. There's been some interesting stories that he's had. You know, he was kind of under the radar for a while, right? He grew up here, but he wasn't like this ballyhooed superstar that you might think he was being a first-round pick. But he had to really work for it, went to Duke. Steadily moved up the chain. I think he was drafted last year. Remember we talked to Kevin? He was driving to Durham to pick up Bryce's stuff after they lost to Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. And he was drafted in like the 37th round or something by the Yankees. So he went from a 37th round pick to a first round pick in 1 year. So that's a pretty good story.
Well, the kid from Arkansas was like a 36th round pick coming out of high school, and he got taken second overall to the Orioles.
But that could mean different things. Like when you're coming out of high school, you might tell the scouts, "Hey, man, you can draft me, but I'm going to college." That could take you down to the 37th round.
Yeah.
But 37th round out of college, that in 1 year, that's a pretty startling jump. And if you heard Al Leiter kind of told the story last night, how Bryce dedicated himself to strength training and you know, some of the high-tech things. It's called driveline, where you can really go into a lab and have your stuff analyzed to maybe figure out how to get a little more velocity, which is amazing. I would have killed for that back in the day because I didn't throw very hard. But he went from, like, what, 89 to 90 on an average day up to 93, 94 on an average day. That's quite a hop because he always had the ability to pitch. And so now – here he is, first-round pick.
Very, very cool. I'll say this, though. The baseball gods, they just wanted you and Austin Martin to have that in common, that you were both drafted out of Vanderbilt by the Blue Jays. That's what I think happened.
How about that?
You can always say that.
Some friends of mine tease me. Some of my friends who are speckled around the baseball world, the journalistic world, and Vanderbilt. They were texting me going, is Vanderbilt ever drafted anybody from the, you know, is the Blue Jays ever drafted any more Vanderbilt guys before Austin Martin? You know, texting me this question sarcastically. I was like, some scrub. Yeah. Some scrub in 93.
What round were you?
25th. Which is sad because I don't know that there'll ever be a 25th round anymore. Yeah. A lot of people are saying it might go to 20. It's probably not going to be 40 anymore. At one time, it went 50 or 60 or however long you wanted to pick, you could pick. Those days are over.
Ask Mike Piazza.
Yeah, what was he, 61st or something?
Sometimes.
He was in the 60-something round, I think.
Does not exist anymore and never will again.
It doesn't exist.
Yep. Yeah, rounds 2 through 5 will be tonight, and that's it. ESPN2 will be where you can find it in MLB Network, but rounds 2 through 5, and that is it. Normally, as you just mentioned, 40-round draft. This year will be a 5-round draft, and anybody picked after that is going to sign $20,000 signing bonus, and that's about
that's
it.
That's the max.
That's the max. That's the max.
I mean, you can go lower. But the max is 20,000.
It's crazy. So rounds 2 through 5 tonight. And last night was a first. First ever in Major League Baseball draft. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
First seven picks were college kids. First time that's ever right. happened.
And you threw out Robert Hassel's name.
He's the one who broke the string.
He was the 8th pick. Right, and so he was the first high school player taken. That's pretty significant to be the first high school player taken in the draft, and we certainly wish him well. I would imagine the chances are overwhelming that he signs if they picked him that high. I don't know if they've agreed on, you know, a ballpark for what the signing bonus is, but the Padres now have grabbed a couple of Vanderbilt signees the last couple of years. Ryan Weathers, who was the 7th pick, and now Robert Hassel, the 8th pick. So San Diego, they've got some pretty good young talent coming through the pipeline if they could ever put it all together. Pretty interesting organization to be a part of right now. And they're going back to the brown uniforms, which you got to love.
Hmm. Yeah, they are. That's going
to
be cool.
Did you see Hassel put on the hat, the brown and gold? They're now back to their original colors. They've bounced around all over the place with color schemes, but they're going back to the original.
More than anybody.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
But, yeah, it'll be cool.
The Jays and the Padres are the ones that have a real big-time pipeline, and you wonder if it's ever going to translate. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean.
The Jays need some pitchers. But, you know, I thought about that when Austin Martin slipped to 5, and we'll ask Tim Corbin about this, but Austin Martin is not far away. It's one thing to be 18. Robert Hassel is going to take time to get to the point where he's ready for the bigs, in all likelihood, right? Unless he becomes a freak, and he's one of those guys who's ready when he's 20 or 21. But that's, I mean, that's possible, but it's probably going to take a little while. Austin Martin is very polished and probably isn't that far from jumping in there. So you think about all these sons of big leaguers that are big-time prospects that the Jays have with Guerrero and Biggio and Bichette, you know, names that you recognize from your childhood. Their sons are really good. Austin Martin could join that crew and give them a really good nucleus to work around there. So he slipped a couple picks, but who knows? It might be good for him.
Yeah, I think the Jays could be pretty solid here in a few years if it all comes together. I want to ask you guys this because I brought this up with Ryan. And I'm just curious, as you know, Willie is somebody that played in the minors. So with the minors changing, like we all think they are, and not going to be the same, and maybe there will be less places to put prospects. Do you think that some of these prospects are maybe going to be rushed up to the big leagues before they're ready, just because you kind of have to? Or do you think it could be the opposite, where you have more veterans that are going to be able to hold on a little bit longer to fill those spots to keep the prospects in AA or AAA?
It's a great question. I think in some cases, yes. And I think the other part of it is you're going to have guys that would have made it. Kevin Jarvis, his first thing he said the other day, I never would have made it if there were no low minor leagues to hone the skills and show that you belong, show that you're better, show that the 20-something round pick is better than the fifth round pick. Baseball people have known it for years that that's where. That's why they've drafted so many guys and have so many teams, because it's not always easy to figure out who's going to be the best player in 3 or 4 years of development. So I just think it's a horrendous move. It's a cost-cutting move, you know, all the way around. They can use this thing about the parks aren't very nice and all of this stuff and percentages. It's just it's very short-sighted what they're doing. But I think it remains to be seen. I don't think they know. I heard a lot of general managers talking about what's coming. They haven't really decided 100%. They just know they are not going to have as many minor league teams. And that's a big question for all the high school players that got picked last night. You know, they're probably going to have some instructional league, barring a big surge in cases, right? They want to have something for those youngsters in the fall. They're not going to play all summer. And then who knows, where do they go? Do they just stay on the minor league complex in front of no fans hardly for a year or two? Where do they play if there's no rookie ball? I don't know. They got to play somewhere. Or you move them up to a level against older players, more developed players, and you might struggle a lot because of that. Derek Jeter made 51 errors at shortstop his first year in pro ball. But it didn't matter because, you know, they wanted him. He was only 18, 19 years old. They knew the potential was there. They had to let him fail some. He hit something like 210 his first year. It doesn't happen overnight for a lot of these guys. It takes time. But where are you going to put these guys?
I think you could see more staying in college or going to college.
Right, if the college programs are funded, right? Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen with that.
Very true.
That's what's going to be rough. I hope that that's the case because I think that's a great way to go. I think that's a great place to develop. But I think we're all concerned of, you know, the funding for a lot of college sports for the next, you know, 5 years or so. So as it pertains to baseball, you're going to do this, and college baseball might have some struggles, then that's not good for the game.
Astros first-round pick, they didn't get one. Their second-round pick, they're not getting one either. They will get the final pick of compensation picks, and that'll be the 72nd pick. So their first draft pick will be number 72 in the MLB draft. Yikes. Not good, but yeah, you're getting punished for what you did.
Yeah. Ask me if I feel sorry for him.
Will he be required to bring his own trash can, or do they provide one for him?
Oh, don't know about that, because I'm going to say the trash cans are probably gone out of that facility. We will come back and head over to West End. We'll talk to Tim Corbin, talk about his work last night on MLB Network, and some of his players getting drafted. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. First round MLB draft in the books last night. Rounds 2 through 5 tonight. Last night was on ESPN and MLB Network. Tonight, rounds 2 through 5 will be on ESPN2 and MLB Network. Our next guest, Tim Corbin, the fine coach at Vanderbilt, the baseball program, who is also a TV star and did tremendous work last night on MLB Network, breaking down some of these kids that was on his team, he faced. Really good stuff from Corbs. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing good, D. Thank you.
Not only did you do great work, but great work. Maggie must have picked out the suit, huh? Great suit selection last night.
Well, I appreciate that. That's all Molly, actually.
Okay.
Maggie and I are not capable of producing that type of outfit, so we have to lean on our daughter for items like that. And, you know, also makeup, too. I wore more makeup last night than my wife has in the 25 years that we've been married.
So this is Molly's area of expertise?
Oh, yeah. She's in that business. And actually, Walker Buehler just ordered 2 jackets this morning from her because he saw it on TV. So she's done quite well. We're proud of her.
Well, tell her job well done. It certainly caught my eye for sure. In all seriousness, how did you like doing that last night? You did a tremendous job.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoy talking about other people's children. I mean, really, when it comes to baseball, I think you know, you can always, when you're an analyst of some kind, you can be critical, but that's a situation where you can really talk about their strengths as a player and what's capable for them in the future and beyond. But I really enjoy that. That's a special night for a lot of those kids.
Well, this is nothing new for you going through this and losing tremendous kids and talented kids for your program. So what has Toronto gotten in Austin Martin?
Well, I think, you know, I know he's ours, but I think they got the best player, and I say that respectfully to everyone. But there's just a lot of things that he can do, and I would say mentally as well as physically. I mean, I think that's really the part when you're around people, you understand what's inside their black box between their ears. And I think on a routine basis, his preparation, his ability to thrive in competition, and, you know, stay very aware of situations that he's in while he's playing is very, very high level. The baseball part of it is, I mean, that's easy to see. He can hit. But what's better than the hitting part and the point I made is his ability to make really good decisions at the plate because he's so calm. And I think when you're a baseball player, your ability to stay calm from pitch to pitch is such a high, high skill. And if you have it, you have a chance to play this game for a long period of time. If you don't, then it becomes frustrating. It becomes a challenge. And this game is very challenging because as good as you are, like Marty is, there's going to be times when you're not. And to be able to bounce back from that is imperative, and he's got tremendous mental recovery skills.
Maybe it's the hair that keeps him so calm.
There was more hair in that living room last night than I've seen in quite some time.
He's actually I saw him doing an interview. Willie must have really been really jealous seeing that. But I saw him doing an interview yesterday, and he talked about how you guys clashed about his hair early on at Vanderbilt.
I mean, if Willie was in that living room, it kind of would have balanced things out. But Marty.
Wow.
Me and Chris Mason, we would have definitely had some balance there.
Coach Corb's off the top rope. I like it.
Boom.
we have. I mean, I think that's probably where Maggie comes in because she's kind of the balancer when it comes to style and so on. And I think through the years too, that's area I've been willing to give a little bit because you understand that that's just so personal to kids. And you know, you get to the point finally where you say, okay, that's his style, and I don't want to homogenize all these kids so they look the same. So just be neat. And he's always been respectful.
Tim Corbin on with us. And last night was the first ever in Major League Baseball draft history. First time the first seven picks have been selected from the college ranks. It's never happened before. And the first kid to go out of high school is Robert Hassel with the eighth pick to the Padres from Independence High School. A kid, you know him and his family very well. So what did the Padres get in Robert Hassel, and what can you tell us about him?
Well, they got a really good player too. I mean, he's a young man that's had success at every level. You take his days as a little leaguer here and going out to Williamsport. I mean, that was kind of a precursor to what his career would be. And he's an anomaly because if you look at him and the young man from Chicago, Howard, who both played little league baseball, typically, that does not happen. You know, you get kids that excel at that level, and they continue to excel. But Robert's done that. Robert's done that in high school. He's done it at the USA level. And now he'll have an opportunity to do it professionally, too. But he's a good player. He's a very good player, and he can do a lot of different things. And I'll be anxious to see how he grows from here. He actually is going to play in the same organization, and Ryan did call me quite a bit, but with Ryan Flaherty, who's with the San Diego Padres, and Ryan made a lot of phone calls to me in recent weeks about Robert and the type of player he was, knowing full well that he was talking to a coach that wanted to have Robert. So, I mean, that's always tricky. Sometimes it's difficult. Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah, what it reminded me, not that I needed that as a reminder, of course I knew, but it's just, yet again, you just look up and down that first-round board, and, man, do you see a lot of SEC players. In other words, players you went up against all the time, and it just reminds us how incredibly difficult the road is trying to win an SEC title and what you have to and your kids have to deal with week in and week out once you get into conference play.
Yeah, you're right, and it's what was fun to talk about those kids because you get to see them a lot. I mean, every time they named an SEC player, it was easy to go to your mental Rolodex and say, oh, boy, I remember that, and, you know, whether it was Crochet or Burns or whomever. But it does, again, let you know how difficult your league is and how fortunate we've been to have success within the league. You just can't take any of that for granted, and it's becoming tougher and tougher all the time. I think the thing about those kids and their ability to sustain professional competition is the high-temperature situations that they've been involved in. And, you know, a couple weeks ago, we would have been in the SEC tournament, and that in and of itself is such a star-ridden an event. And then the regional and super regional, and today we would have gone to Omaha, and a lot of those SEC players have played in Omaha. So typically when you get an SEC player, is they're going to arrive with a calm heartbeat, and I think that's the strength of our conference.
We're talking to Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt head baseball coach, analyst last night on MLB Network in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft. So, Corbin, we were just talking about this before you came on. One of the things that we're all trying to envision is what the minor leagues are going to look like in the next couple years. I don't know that we know the answer. It's been kind of vague. We know it's going to change. But one thing that dawned on me as I was watching you guys discuss all these players, whether they be high school players or third-year college players, is everybody makes big jumps at different times. I remember the story you and Maggie at different times on the air both told your versions of, you know, some of Austin Martin's growth pattern, right? He's always had the ability to play, but there, you know, there was a time you had to sit him, and he sat next to Maggie in the stands. I mean, these are all ways that a guy grows and matures and gets on his path. They told the story of Bryce Jarvis last night making the huge jump from last year to this year with his velocity, and he was pretty darn good last year. So the development levels are so different in this game, and I'm really concerned about what it's going to look like if there's less places to play for players that might be late bloomers, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, first of all, you're talking about with Martin and Jarvis, you're talking about two emotionally stable kids inside of baseball, which is going to allow them to have some growth. But there's some others that may not be able to find that emotional growth because they won't have the experiences. And to your point, because minor league system will be reduced, which is difficult. It's difficult for kids because the numbers are going to be reduced, and there's only so many players you'll be able to keep. How the minor leagues or how they operate, how organizations run their system, whether they keep a bunch of players back at the complex and only send out a single A, a double A, a triple A team, who knows? But I think, to your point, and I think this is important for any type of parent that has a child that's in baseball, is everyone has their own road. It's looking left and looking right and seeing what your partner does, that is not the way to go down the athletic path, because your child will dictate the speed of how they need to move. I was talking to a general manager this morning, and we were talking about players in general. And I know some players got drafted last night that the industry would tell you that they have to sign because it makes fiscal sense. It makes economic sense that that player signs. But the reality is not everyone's ready to get married. And in order to sustain a relationship, this one in baseball, you do have to have some emotional experiences that are going to allow you to sustain that relationship. And there were a couple college kids last night that, yeah, they got picked, and yes, they'll sign. But the reality is, I know they're 4-year college people. It would serve them well to get 12 more months, 200 more at bats, 100 more innings, in order to really find out who they are. And they won't do that, nor does the industry say that, no, they're ready to go right now. And I'm not talking about Martin, and I'm not talking about Jarvis, but I think everyone has their own path. And I think that's really important for a young man or a parent to understand that to each his own. This is not something you do just because the movement is headed in that way. This is all individual.
Great point. So today you've got a lot of your guys with only 5 rounds, and actually now one of them's gone, so it's rounds 2 through 5. You have a lot of good players that are hoping to get the call today, and then if they don't, then they'll be in this next phase of, I guess, waiting for the phone to ring and seeing if they sign with the team that wants them. But so what's the outlook? How many of your guys do you think, it's hard to know, I guess, Corbs, but how many guys do you think will go off the board today from your squad?
You know, it's really tough to tell. I mean, there could be 5, there could be 0. You know, it's like that. I don't think there'll be 0. I think, you know, Jake Eater has been someone that we certainly have entertained a lot of calls about. But that's very difficult to tell right now, just because of the unknowing part of what professional baseball does and who they pick and how the organization sees people. But I think that's the part for us, is we just sit here and we watch it when we watch it play out. Now, the free agency piece, after these 5 rounds are done, the organizations have an opportunity to sign anyone they want for $20,000. And, yeah, is $20,000 a start? Yeah, it's nominal. I mean, you know, Will, you lived it. You'll end up paying yourself to have to play. You'll have to play in order to get involved in professional baseball. So that's really not much of an investment. But there are seniors who will certainly sign for that and move forward. But it's really difficult to tell who will lose and who will keep today. But, you know, we'll know by midnight tonight.
Well, what effect? They talked about this a lot with some of the high school kids, with the fact that, you know, basically – you know, they put the stats up for some of their high school seasons, and in some cases it's 5 games or 6 games. So you couldn't really get anything. You know, maybe you saw a kid in late February, early March play a game before everything shut down. But all of the summer things that go on, you have this data that is now compiled on high school players. What do you think that effect has been on how accurately you can scout a kid, especially under these circumstances where you didn't get a whole season to watch him before this draft?
Well, there's some analytical teams that move on those numbers and that put a lot of stock in them. And then there's other organizations that don't put as much stock in them. It's probably a blend in terms of what the reality of a player is. But until they come up with an analytical system to understand what's in a young man's head and in their chest, then it makes it very difficult, because that's the common denominator. Those are the items right there that allow the physical skill sets to exist and exist at a high level. We're talking about a lot of book covers here. You know, when you look at these players, that's really what they are. They really, really show well. Metrically, they show well. But you start opening up the book and you start reading, then you start understanding what can player A do in this situation. And the only way you can understand that is by watching it, you know, watching it on a day-to-day basis. And that's why I speak with a little bit of confidence when it comes to a guy like Austin Martin, because time and time and time and time and time again, he shows you that he's capable of doing certain things. And he's also, through time and through adjustments and experiences, that there's some things he couldn't do. And because he couldn't do them, then you, as a teacher, were challenged to make sure that you bring those to his attention so he can try to modify behaviors in order to get to the place that he wants to go. And if I don't do that, and if our staff doesn't do that, then we haven't served him well. Then the development piece never happens. So I think the metric piece of it helps, but there's no metrics for that black box between someone's ear. That comes out by that's HD quality by what someone does over time.
Yep.
We're talking to Vanderbilt baseball coach Tim Corbin here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. So I'm curious, and I like asking you these types of questions, but since you've been at Vanderbilt since 2003, obviously the type of kid has changed, personalities change, society changes. So how has the conversation between you and a young man that's trying to decide whether they're in high school that, okay, I'm going to sign with Vanderbilt and play college ball, or I know I'm going to get drafted or have gotten drafted and go play in the pros, or they're deciding whether it's time to leave and go to the major leagues. How has that conversation evolved for you since you've been at Vanderbilt?
Certainly with more personal care, because you start putting yourself in the shoes of the individual that you're speaking to, and you're speaking with them. You're not talking down to them. You're really speaking up to them, because it's their decision, and you want to help facilitate that decision as best you possibly can. I think the rub becomes when you know your daughter's not ready to get married, but she's emotionally tied to the idea that she wants to get married, that she gets married. But you know in the back of your mind, I'm going to go through it. I'm going to watch it. We're going to go to the wedding. We're going to have a great time. But when I wake up the next morning, it says that has a chance not to work. And I think that when you know that instinctually, because of age and because of seeing enough people go through it, I think that's when you got to interject your own feelings and say, listen, and whether that person wants to listen or not, they do. She wants to run off and still get married. She does, but that's her choice. And then she's got to live with that choice after that. But I think the other piece of this is now, after doing this for 35 years and watching it go around and watching a lot of first rounders, I mean, there's a Rolodex of a lot of experiences. So I can take my mind back to a certain situation and share that with someone who's making that decision. If it helps them, it helps them. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But then there's some kids and parents that will look at it and say, we're going to satisfy coach by having this conversation, but we're going to do what we're going to do. And I typically understand that before I have the conversation, because I don't want to have a conversation for the sake of conversation, because I do not want to waste anyone's time, most selfishly my own. And then you walk away from it. But I think you have the ability to impart your wisdom or experiences with someone to help them make a clear decision.
Have you ever come across the thought process of whether it's the kid or the parents, that if you're having the conversation with someone and you're saying that it would be in your best interest, you know, to come back or to come to Vanderbilt and to go this route and not jump in to professional baseball yet? Have you ever run into where they're, you know, maybe they push back and they think, well, he's a good player, you just want him on your team? I know that you don't go about it that way, but is that something that you've ever run into?
Yeah, no, not really run into, but they might have those feelings, you know, when they get back in the house and talk to one another, and they say he feels that way. I don't think they feel that way now, because I try not to make anyone feel that way. I mean, yes, there's certain kids that you say to yourself, Vanderbilt is better because of this person. And quite frankly, if Ethan Paul and Stephen Scott and others choose to sign in 2018, we don't have a national championship in 2019. So I think there were conversations with those kids about coming back and what it may look like, and try to paint a visual picture for them. And I'm not saying those conversations were the reason they came back, but if we don't have those conversations, they don't come back. And because that led to another conversation that they were going to have either with their parents or someone else. And I think, again, when you extract information from people because you bring something up that sometimes is uncomfortable, Case in point, the Drew Brees thing last week. I don't mean to abandon our conversation, but what he did with his comments was just extract the information from his teammates that he really needed to hear. And because of that, he modified behaviors. And I think that's what you do when you sit down and talk to people, is it's a confrontation technique, but yet all you're doing is confronting behaviors, much like you do in a marriage, so your partners stay together, so there's no divorce. And thankfully, during those times, those kids stayed together, so we had that 2019 memory.
I feel smarter every time I talk to Tim. I just want everybody to know that.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
You going to be wearing makeup tonight?
No, I'm done with that.
You're done? Okay.
Yeah, Maggie and I will just watch that ourselves. And I enjoy watching it anyway. And I'll enjoy getting it over with as well, so we can start to move forward and start to put this roster together.
No doubt. Tim, always appreciate the visits. As always, good to talk to you. And Maggie and the family and the girls, continue to be safe. And we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, that is Tim Corbin, Vanderbilt baseball coach. We do appreciate him joining us as always. There's news on the NHL front. We'll tell you what we're talking about to close out hour number one of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Special thanks to Tim Corbin for joining us here in the first hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Always good chats with him. RockNashville.com, that is the website. Many local businesses here in Middle Tennessee are open and ready to serve you during these times. You can help them out by visiting rocknashville.com for delivery/pickup options, also fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and so much more. Go check it out, rocknashville.com. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. Good stuff there. Coming up at the top of the next hour at 11 o'clock, Shane Foster, a little game night action with Willie the other night. You're going to want to hear former Vanderbilt great basketball player Shane Foster, what he's been doing in the community. If you've listened to this show over the years, you know what he's been doing in the community. Pretty powerful stuff that you're going to hear at 11 o'clock today here on the program. On the NHL side of things, there has been an agreement on an opening date between the NHL and the NHLPA for formal training camps. The NHL has announced, along with the PA, that formal training camps Phase 3 for the 24 teams resuming play will be on Friday, July 10th. That's provided that medical and safety conditions allow and the parties have reached an overall agreement on resuming play, the length of training camp, and therefore the start date of formal resumption of play, which will be Phase 4, will be determined at a future date. That was a little choppy on my part. If I was ice, that was
good,
probably bad ice. I can do better, but my next line change, my next shift, I'll be better. But
get you some water, you'll be good.
Friday, July 10th, Phase 3, 24 teams resuming play, and looks like the NHL is starting to inch ever so closely to everything getting out there, and we'll know exactly when this thing is going to get cranked up again.
Well, they feel confident that things are on schedule. That's the biggest thing I think you can take out of that. Remember when Gary Bettman unveiled the plan officially, even though a lot of it had leaked out, he said no earlier than July 1st. And then within 24 hours, that date had been pushed to July 10th. And I really don't know why that was. Maybe we'll ask Elliot Friedman about that. But there must have been a reason. But July 10th is the target, and since that press conference, they've been able to stay with that target. That's a good sign. Now, if you notice in the release, there's a lot of provided this and make sure the health that and all that. So let's just continue to keep our fingers crossed that path doesn't have to be changed for some reason. But I think, again, it illustrates the players and league coming together and have worked very, very hard on this. So many things. Remember back in late March, early April, when we were starting all these conversations, what are we in for here? What is this going to look like? We had all of these questions. Like, how are they possibly going to play? Well, they have worked extremely hard and together to get to this point. And why am I saying this? Well, there's another league that still doesn't have it together. Mm-hmm. Still doesn't have it together. and nothing on that front. It's very silent there. So the contrast is quite stark.
Not Jason. Not Jason Stark.
Not Jason, but Jason has written some awesome stuff about it, and it is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm glad.
I don't want to get off the point. It's a, you know, it's a good day for the NHL because they have a course. They have plotted their course, right? The course might have to be altered somewhere in there, but they've got their course, right? And they've got their end game in mind. The NBA's done a pretty good job too. In fact, they just announced that they didn't announce it. It was kind of leaked out there. One of the questions we've tried to tackle is what about the media? So Darren, you took your family down to Disney. I've done the same thing. I had a great time, right? Staying there for several days, I would recommend it, right? If you can do it right, staying on the grounds is a good thing. Can you imagine staying there for 3 months? They're going to allow the basketball writers to go down there, but they basically can't leave. So if you're going to cover it from start to finish, you could be there as long as 3.5 months at Disney. Would you get a little sick of it after a while? I do wonder.
I mean, look, you're going to be stuck somewhere. If there's a place you're going to be stuck for a while, especially if you're going to make a long run, there are worse places than Disney.
You're right. It is paradise. It's well kept up. I mean, it's great. I just wonder anyone.
I mean, let's go
leave,
back to.
Though. Well, you can't leave.
Well, yeah. Well, let's go back to what the NHL first started throwing out there. How would you like to be stuck in North Dakota?
Or Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
Or Saskatchewan for months. I mean, let's see. I mean, I'm just saying.
Disney's sounding pretty good.
Nothing against Disney them, but let's see. Good. Disney, Dakota, Saskatchewan. Disney,
but to
Dakota,
Willie's point.
Saskatchewan. I mean,
do you get an all-access pass, though? Do you get an all-access pass anytime you want to go to the Magic Kingdom? Is that part of the perks? Like, if you want to take a day off from the basketball, can you hit the parks?
I'm going to say probably not.
I would say
I don't
no.
know if the parks are a part of the bubble.
I don't think the parks will be part of the bubble. It's a,
it's a bubble.
You're right.
You're kind of defeating the purpose if you go to the parks.
You're out of the bubble.
And
unless
by the way,
the parks are the shut down for just the NBA.
I don't know if you guys saw last night. I was watching SVP Sports Center. That there are some players that are concerned about that bubble. So I wonder how that's going to affect things. If you're going to have, you know, because we brought this up before with any sport. You know, what if you have a player that's like, yeah, I'm good. I'm probably not going to play, not going to go. Well, I think it depends on who those players are. You know, what they, you know, I mean, if it's a superstar, then that could change the way of thinking. But I can certainly get that. Woj was on with SVP, and they both were like, yeah, I mean, I get the concerns. Not going to really get mad at them for that. But back to the NHL, it's good to have a date. That was one thing that I was waiting for is let's go ahead and get some dates out like the other sports or the NBA, you know, MLS are doing. Baseball doesn't know what it's doing. But I'm glad to have that.
Well, I mean, I would say it's fine, certainly understandable for players to express that concern. But how long are you prepared to have this feeling? Because the start of next season, is anything going to have changed more than likely? I would say not.
So you, start so you think they start next season in a bubble? Is that what you're saying?
No, but I mean, your concerns are – wouldn't you have the same concerns the start of next season, whether it's a bubble or not? I mean, nothing's changed.
Yes, but this with the NBA is specific to the bubble, is what Woj was reporting last night.
Well, so, what's the concern? Like just being away from your family?
Just all being
or safety concerns.
Safety concerns because you're piling everybody into a confined space, is how I took it, which I get. I mean,
I guess when you're in the gym, but not when you're on the grounds. I think there's a lot of space down there. If you've been down there,
right? But
you can space
but you're
out.
Still right. But their point is, you're still like it's a bubble. Like you're still looking at it like it's a bubble. So,
I'll say it. What's going to change at the start of their next season, which whenever that is, what's going to be different?
I mean, probably nothing. But okay, they still have the right to have a concern.
Yeah, they have a right to concern. But I would say to them, okay, but are you saying you don't want to play till when? I mean, what's going to change? I guess that's. That's kind of where we are with all this. Like, what's going to change?
And there are
going to
be
like
some that
either,
won't.
Huh?
There are going to be players. I don't know who they are, but there will be players, I would imagine, in the NHL and the NBA that say, yeah, I'm not going to play. And they may not come back until this is all done. And I don't think you can punish them for that. I think you just kind of have to take it and accept it.
You really believe that?
Yes.
I do not.
That there won't be player or that you can't punish them?
No, you're saying that you're saying that players are going to flat out refuse to come back.
I think there will be some. Why is that so crazy?
I don't see that happening. They would already said it. I mean, what are they waiting for? I mean, there's no reason to wait. I mean, if that's how strongly you feel and that's perfectly within your rights, then why wouldn't you just come out and say
tell
your team, tell the league, hey, I'm out. It doesn't matter what you guys agree on, I'm out.
I think it would be unnatural to not have any concerns. I mean, you're just not human.
Of course.
If you don't have
especially
any
as you get closer to it. I mean, Darren, you've never had
the same. But at the same time, I can tell you last week, we talked about it on the show, going to Atlanta, we had concerns, right? We almost, at first, we were like, we can't do this. And then after we talked to some people and worked through a lot of stuff and in our own minds, as much as anything, felt comfortable with everything we had been able to absorb from people we valued in talking to, we felt good enough to be able to go. I think that's what every player has to do in all these leagues, right? And listen, we don't have health concerns. If I had a health concern, then those concerns would be magnified in a big, big way, right? So I wouldn't blame anybody for doing that. But the bottom line is this is the job, right? And you are a part of a team as well. So those are things you have to consider, right?
How many kids and families didn't go to your tournament in Atlanta? How many kids / families on your team didn't go?
On our team?
Yeah.
One.
For this, what we're talking about?
I don't know the reasons exactly that family decided not to go. There may have been more than one. And I don't know how everybody else in the tournament decided to go. A lot of them were local teams. But
this is what I'm getting at is – We have concerns.
My point is having concerns are important. It's
exactly
important to have the concerns and voice the concerns and have conversations about it, right?
But in
to
the work end, through it. That's like the what you thing. Just said, this is what you do. So either you're going to do it or you're not going to. It's the same thing with our team. I mean, did everybody have concerns? Well, yeah. Do I? Yes. I mean, we all should. But in the end, we're playing in a tournament this weekend, and there's nobody that's not coming because of that. Doesn't mean that nobody doesn't have concerns, but you're a team, and
yeah,
this
just
is what you're doing. So either you're out, like you're quitting, you're done, or you're in with concerns. I mean, I don't see anybody say because that story would already be out there because you're not going to change. Nothing's
not necessarily.
Changing. Why? What's going to change?
Well, because you're waiting. I mean, okay, number one.
What is going to change? Nothing. So why would you – that story already leak out there that so-and-so has
so
said,
you've
hey,
never
look,
been
I'm
in
out.
A situation where you know something is coming, and you got dates, and you're thinking about it, and as you get closer, you might go, I've always had a bad feeling about this. I'm changing my mind. You've never been in a situation like that?
There are players on teams that are scared – Willie can tell you this – that are scared to death to fly. Scared to death. Like it is a fear beyond it's hard for you know, I don't exactly enjoy it, but I don't have those same fears. We know people that are scared to death to fly. But in the end, if that's your job and you have to go for they always get on the plane and they go with the team. You know,
yeah,
yes, there's the John Madden.
This is a pandemic. This is different. So if somebody
changes but you're talking about a fear, though. It's the same thing. If you got a fear of something, it's the same feeling inside and how you feel.
But I believe there are some fears that, okay, yeah, you have to get over and you just have to do it. This is one of those fears that if somebody – like if we're all on a – and we all are on a team. But if we're on a team and I just – I'm like, guys, I hate doing this to you, but I just – and it could be because there was an underlying medical condition. I mean, there are wrestlers in WWE which hasn't stopped during this whole thing that backed out because they either had a family member or themselves with an underlying medical condition and they didn't feel safe. And WWE said, yeah, okay, we get it. We'll take you off TV and then when this is done, come back. I think that could happen.
No, you said it will happen.
Yeah.
And that's why I said I don't believe it will. But we'll see who's right. I'm not rooting for anything. I'm not rooting one way or the other. I feel like if that was going to happen, it would have already been out there. Nothing's going to change. If you feel that strongly, then that's fine. But you would already have told your informed the team, your teammates, the coaches, the organization, like, I'm out. Like, I'm not comfortable doing this. I'm out. Nothing's changing from now until when you report to Orlando. Nothing. So why wouldn't that be out there? That's all I'm saying. And having those feelings are okay, but I don't know how that story stays hidden until it's time to go. If you have those feelings now, nothing's changing. So wouldn't you just go on and say, look, I'm sorry. I can't do this.
Well, I don't know. There is a story out right now that says faction of NBA players hesitant to restart season in Orlando bubble. So that's the whole reason I'm bringing this up, because it was on ESPN last night that there are a group of players, and that's one of those things that where there's smoke, there's fire. So to your point, yeah, you wonder why they haven't brought this up until now, but it could be they're waiting for all the facts. They're waiting for, okay, where are the hotels? What is the bubble? And it just, your feelings change, or they get stronger as time moves on. I don't have the right answer for it, but I feel like there's going to be some players that say, I'm just not comfortable and I'm not going to go.
Okay. That's your opinion. I don't see that happening. I think everybody's going to have the same feelings and should, but in the end, it's like, well, this is what I do and this is what it is. So we got to do it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to play out. I would be probably lean more toward the surprised at this point if people just started bailing out, because I don't know what would have changed. Either if you feel that strongly in what you do, I would think it would already be out there, because, you know, it's okay to feel that strongly. There's just some people that have fears. And when you say, you know, but that's different. No, when people have fears of something, it's not different in their mind. It may be different to you because you get on a plane and you don't have a fear of flying. I mean, we bounced around like, you know, we were in a Yahtzee, like we were some dice in a Yahtzee game going to Kansas City from Dallas, and you slept through it. I was white knuckling it. I wasn't comfortable at all. It didn't bother you. You slept.
It was a good nap.
Fears are fears, and I get it. Pandemic, airplane ride, whatever. But in people's minds, if you have a strong fear of something, you don't rationalize what's this. You know, you don't put them in categories. It's just bad. It's bad for you no matter what it is. If you have a fear of something, like, it's just not going to change. And if you had something that strong about this, I just would think it would already be out there. Like, they're not going to change their mind. They would be like, yeah, I'm out. I'm sorry. Thank you for putting this together. I get it. I understand that you're doing the right thing, but I'm out. I'm just not comfortable. I just think that story would be out there. I could be wrong. You may end up being right. Some players may do that.
This is the time will tell thing.
Yeah. Well, it won't be that long. We'll know.
No.
All right, we'll come back. A really good conversation with Vanderbilt great Shane Foster. You're going to want to hear this to start the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.